Next case for argument, United States v. Hogsett. Mr. Sinclair.
Good morning, Your Honors. Martin Sinclair appearing pro bono, and may it please the Court. Martin Sinclair appearing pro bono on behalf of Samuel R. Hogsett. Mr. Hogsett was arrested after police officers pulled him over and searched his vehicle and found less than half a gram of crack cocaine on the passenger seat of the vehicle and a firearm just next to that seat. Sitting there was Taisha Ford, his cousin, and a key witness at the trial against him. And that trial had two prejudicial errors. First is that the district court violated Mr. Hogsett's Sixth Amendment right to confrontation when it completely foreclosed cross-examination on a particular motive for bias. The second is that the government was allowed to introduce evidence of prior bad acts without providing the requisite notice under Federal Rule of Evidence 404B. And we know that these errors were not harmless because in the midst of deliberations, the jury sent a note to the district court and they asked three questions. But the relevant questions on appeal, the second question, went to the statements that Taisha Ford had made over the course of time. And the third question, which I'll try to quote, but forgive me if it's a paraphrase, said, if we have come to a decision on count one, but we cannot come to a decision on counts two and three, do we have to continue to deliberate? It's counts two and three that Mr. Hogsett appeals today. It's counts two and three that were specific intent counts that Taisha Ford's testimony went to directly. Now, the Sixth Amendment guarantees a defendant the right to cross-examine the witnesses brought against them. And that cross-examination necessarily includes the need to suss out the motive for the testimony, the need to explore the witness's motive in testifying, and to explore the potential for bias. And bias has been defined by the Supreme Court to mean the conscious or unconscious shading of testimony for a particular party. And the reason that it's important to explore bias is because you need to give the jury sufficient information to make a reasonable credibility determination.
What is the indication that she thought that these state warrants were going to be, that somehow the federal prosecutor would help her with her state problems?
Your Honor, the important consideration is her subjective belief and that the jury be able to consider that. And what we know is that in the cross-examination that was in the evidentiary hearing, which should have taken place in front of the jury, what she said was that she had returned to East Alton to take care of two warrants. And those two warrants were necessary because she was working in the town to which she had moved.
I
she was working.
But what is the indication that she thought that the federal prosecutors would help her deal with those warrants?
Well, she had discussed those warrants explicitly with Special Agent Heiser, who conveyed the information to Detective Paletto, who then spoke to the city clerk's office.
Well, did she say to the federal prosecutor, you know, I have these warrants, and if you get the state to quash them, then, you know, I'll be able to work and I'll certainly be well disposed to you if you do that for me.
She didn't say anything that explicit.
Well, how about implicit?
I'm sorry?
What she said to him. Saying something implicit. What did she say implicitly?
In this cross-examination, what she said to Special Agent Heiser was that she had returned to address these warrants and that she was not able to continue working without having these warrants taken care of. And she even told Special Agent Heiser that she had returned to deal with those warrants, not initially. She didn't even know that she had to testify at trial, and that she may not be able to testify at trial unless those warrants were taken care of. And the important point is that her subjective belief regarding what had happened, and that cross-examination take place in front of the jury, and that the jury be able to use that information to inform their credibility determination. And that cross-examination was never introduced to the jury. And we know that that error on behalf of the district court, which should be reviewed de novo because it implicates a core value of Mr. Hogsett's Sixth Amendment right, we know that that error was beyond harmless because of these jury questions, because question two on its docket entry number 92 on the lower court. But because of these questions, we know that the jury was already considering her credibility. We know that that was already an issue. Furthermore, she's Mr. Hogsett's cousin. She's family. And she was the only witness at trial who had not been convicted of a prior crime. The brothers Gleason had both been convicted, and they had both, one of the brothers had admitted that he was a confidential informant for police officers and had lied before.
At this hearing, did she say that she thought the government was or would help her with her state warrants?
She did not say that, Your Honor. But again, the purpose in allowing the jury to make this credibility determination or allowing the jury to hear the cross-examination.
What would you have liked to ask her the trial lawyer had been permitted to cross-examine her on this, what would he have asked her?
He would have asked her the same questions.
Would she have said? The same. She would have given the same answers. So then what would the jury infer from this?
Well, we don't know that she would have given the same answers. We don't know how it might have played out at trial. And that's why we asked that this cross-examination have taken place. We can't say now from the cold transcript what she might have said. But what is important is that the jury hear not only her answers.
What if she gave the same answer?
What's
how
important?
How would that help Hogsett?
Because the Supreme Court has defined bias to be the conscious or unconscious shading,
that's
the manner.
Not an answer. What would you ask the jury to infer if she gave the same answer?
I would ask the jury. The jury would have been given the opportunity to consider her body language.
What would you have asked the jury to infer?
What would we have asked the jury?
That's a very straightforward question.
I apologize, Your Honor. That she had this particular motive to answer specifically and to help the government in this case in a way that was greater than she had considered before, because the warrants were contingent during trial, and she may have thought that the government would help her get those warrants dismissed entirely after trial and she would be able to return to work.
She may have thought, but what if she says she didn't think that?
If she says that she didn't think that, the jury would still have been able to take the way in which she said that into consideration when making that credibility determination.
Okay.
And they were already, as per the jury questions, they were already considering that. Now, as for the second issue on appeal, Federal Rule of Evidence 404B, the government has taken the position that notice was not necessary because Taisha Ford's testimony as to Mr. Hogsett's prior bad acts fell under the doctrine as being inextricably intertwined. But this is a legal misapplication of the doctrine. We ask that the court review the error de novo. And that's because Mr. Hogsett's prior bad acts were not necessary to define the meaning of the term hit a lick. And it was not the meaning of the term hit a lick was not in dispute. Taisha Ford was asked what he had said. He said that he was going to hit a lick. He was then asked as to what she meant by that phrase or what her understanding was, and she defined it. There was no dispute. There was no objection at that point.
The point Mr. Anderson made in the last case that if she had just said hit a lick means, you know, buy drugs or sell drugs, then in closing argument, defense counsel could say, well, she said that, but what does she know? The government didn't give any basis for her knowledge. Then it'd be too late for the government to do anything.
That may be the case in terms of introducing new evidence, but
I don't understand you.
I apologize. At that point, the jury is still able to assume her understanding of the meaning of the phrase hit a lick, which had not been disputed on direct testimony.
You've lost me. So she says, the government says, what does hit a lick mean? And she answers. And then there are two alternatives. One, he says, well, how do you know that? The other is he says nothing. And if he says nothing, then in closing argument, defense counsel may say, well, look, she said that it means thus and so, but there's no substantiation of that, and you shouldn't believe that, right? And then there's nothing the government can do. It's too late.
I think at that point, we would return to the necessity of the inextricably intertwined doctrine and say that is it really necessary to complete the story?
I wouldn't use that term, inextricably interwoven. I think that's just words. The point is, I mean, I'm making a very, I'm just echoing Mr. Anderson. I thought he made a good point. that if you don't ask her how she knows, you deliver a tactical weapon to the defense.
She'd already defined her meaning of the phrase.
Yes, I know, but who is she? Why? How does she know this, right? So defense counsel says she said that. Well, but she doesn't know anything.
I see that my time is up, Your Honor.
So what? If I ask you a question, I obviously expect an answer.
Absolutely. At that point, I think the government will be able to say that there was no challenge to her meaning and the jury is in place to assume that that's what it means, and it had not been challenged on testimony.
Why would there have been a challenge? I don't understand you.
Because the defense would have wanted to redefine the phrase as to question her knowledge of that fact at that point.
The defense would want her to explore her relationship, her knowledge of the drug trade? What sense does that make?
Well, in this particular situation, I'm not sure about Mr. Anderson's case, but in this particular situation...
Same case, actually. Same issue.
The facts are that was the sole statement as to Mr. Hogsett's specific...
It's the problem. It's the sole statement, so it better be right. And, you know, you want to let the jury know that, you know, she didn't make this up. She knows about this stuff.
Well, I think in defining it with the prior bad acts, if that was the case, then there would need to have been noticed under Federal Rule of Evidence 404B.
No, this isn't about using prior acts to prove intent or opportunity or modus operandi or anything like that. This is just... providing enough background so that a jury can assess the credibility of a witness. That's completely dead. Nothing to do with 404B. So if
I may respond just briefly, the facts of this case are that challenge was made, but the testimony to define her understanding of the phrase, there's no simple back and forth between the prosecutor as to her understanding and the prior bad acts. The facts in this case are that she said it means hit a lick, and then he said, her understanding was that means to sell drugs, and then they immediately jumped into him selling drugs. There's no direct connection between her understanding of the phrase and then what it meant with his drug sales. It just said, what does hit a lick mean? It means to sell drugs. Had you been with him when he sold drugs before? Now, in that situation, there's a gap of logic. And the jury is maybe allowed to draw an impermissible inference or an inappropriate inference.
But it would have
inference.
Been all right to for the government to ask her, how do you know it means that? Would that be all right?
For the government to ask her?
Yeah.
If noted... Perhaps, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Sinclair.
Reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Borowski.
May it please the Court. My name is Nicole Borowski, and I represent the United States in this matter. I think it's interesting. I'm going to start with the first point. I think it's interesting how defense counsel seems to hang his hat on the Splunge decision, which states that it's the subjective belief of the witness testifying in terms of her possible bias, because it's clear from the evidentiary hearing held in this matter that Ms. Ford had no idea whatsoever or had no belief whatsoever that she was getting any sort of benefit from the government. On the first warrant, she thought she spent a night in jail on that warrant and had no idea it had been recalled. And on the second warrant, her testimony shows she just thought she got a new court date. And I think I would like to clear up a factual matter, which is that I believe defense counsel said that she had stated that she might not be able to testify if she didn't get those warrants cleared up. I don't remember seeing anything in the record to back that up. There was no link whatsoever between getting her warrants cleared up and her testifying in this matter. And that was absolutely clear from the record. And the judge did the absolutely right thing in not allowing the matter to go before the jury. The judge has to be the gatekeeper on this kind of evidence. Otherwise, we would have a tangent of another mini-trial going on in this case over the issue of these warrants. And I think that would be the definition of the running roughshod that is defined in the Couto case. Therefore, I believe this was a reasonable limit on the scope of cross-examination. As for the second argument, the second point in the case.
Before you go to the second, though, on the first argument, it is the perception of the witness, though, that is critical, isn't it? Whether the witness perceives that he or she would be getting some benefit.
Absolutely. And there was no such perception in this case. So it is her perception that's important, and her perception was that she received no benefit. And therefore, she had no bias on that issue whatsoever. Now, defense counsel was allowed to explore other avenues of possible bias and motive to lie. And so, again, as I said, this was a reasonable limit on the scope of cross-examination in this case. On the second point, I hate to repeat the previous argument, but just like my predecessor before me, had this witness, who was not sophisticated and articulate and did have some impeachment done by defense counsel, she was not going to just say, I know what hit a lick means, and have the jury automatically believe that. Or maybe she was, but the prosecution trial attorney cannot rely on that. They have to prove to the jury why she knows what this means. And this is not a typical single delivery case where you have a distribution, and therefore you don't need this prior evidence to show the intent. This is a case where, yes, it's a single delivery, but the delivery wasn't made yet. And so the government was required to prove the intent to distribute in the charge. Therefore, this evidence was absolutely essential that to show that when Mr. Hogsett said he was going to hit a lick, that meant he was going to sell drugs. And it was absolutely necessary, obviously, to complete the story, to avoid a conceptual void in the case, and to explain the circumstances. It's exactly the same as the U.S. v. Harris case, which addressed this type of slang language. Again, if there are no further questions, I would just ask that this court affirm.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Gorovsky. So, Mr. Sinclair, your time had expired, but you can have another minute if you'd like.
With regards to the Sixth Amendment issue, again, her answer, what's important is that the determination of witness credibility, as per Davis v. Alaska, is within the sole province of the jury. And furthermore, in her testimony at the evidentiary hearing, which she says in a conversation with on examination, she says, and did you tell Mr. Heiser that that's what you wanted to do while you were here? Mr. Heiser is the special agent from the federal government. No. Question. Okay. Did you tell him that there were these warrants? Yes. I told him that there were warrants, that there were the warrants, because I knew I had to come to court here, and I didn't want it to be no surprise if I came to court and then I had the warrants and I would have went to jail or something and I wouldn't have been able to testify. She was clearly concerned about those warrants. And previously, she testified about the impact of the warrants on her ongoing livelihood. She had a job to which she was not able to return. The jury never heard this information, and the jury was never given a fair opportunity to evaluate his credibility. We don't ask that Mr. Hogsett's trial had been perfect. We asked only that his trial had been fair, and that in light of the jury questions on the specific intent charges 2 and 3, which we're appealing today, and their desire to determine the credibility of Ms. Ford over time, that it's extraordinarily difficult for this court to say beyond a reasonable doubt that those errors were harmless. Thank you. We ask that you vacate remand 2 and 3.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, counsel. And Mr. Sinclair, you were appointed, were you not? So we thank you for your excellent efforts on behalf of your client. And thank Ms. Gorovsky as well.